threatens.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
To be as gods, you know,
catapult to propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed, split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
There are two ways to look at the world. One is with a rational perspective, considering the evidence and weighing the conclusions carefully. And the other is to believe that everything is just an accident, the product of evolution and random chance. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest is one who definitely has the supernatural worldview, is more of a, say, conspiracy theorist, because coincidence theories don't hold together when you really start to examine them, especially in the light of Scripture. I guess the Apostle Paul really knew what he was saying when he wrote that we're not wrestling against human opponents, but against powers, principalities, and rulers of spiritual darkness. He is the host of the Watchers series of DVDs and Acceleration Radio, author of numerous books, and his most recent, which is due out momentarily, called Days of Chaos. It is our honor to welcome our friend L.A. Marzulli back to the bunker. L.A., thanks for joining us this morning.
Absolutely, Derek. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to break intellectual bread with you, as it were. Really good to be here.
Days of Chaos. Boy, all one has to do is look at the headlines the last year especially, but it seems like each day goes by, it's reinforces the truth of the title of your forthcoming book. I mean, just today, looking at headlines in the Middle East, four more people chained and burned alive by the Islamic State. Boko Haram killing people in Nigeria. And of course the economic pressures are just whipsawing back and forth. The oil is up, oil is down. Stocks are up, stocks are down. The Chinese government can't figure out how to make their stocks keep going up, so they're arresting traders for being traitors. It's almost mind bending what is going on out there and how people make sense of it. Conspiracy theorist is used as a pejorative, but it's the only worldview that really makes sense. But having said that, L.A., it only makes sense if you're a Christian conspiracy theorist, because at the end of the day, we still have that blessed hope, whereas the agnostics, the atheists looking at the world around us, they've got no answer to the problem and no reason to put their feet, keep putting their feet one in front of the other from day to day.
You know, it's interesting that you call it conspiracy theorist, because, you know, definitely from the world's point of view, that's what those of us who hold to a supernatural worldview would be called.
Right.
But what people don't understand, there is a conspiracy, and it's a Luciferian conspiracy, and that conspiracy has been going on at least 2,000 years. I would posit that it's far older than that. It's really been going on since Genesis chapter 3, where the Most High God says to the three people he's addressing, Adam and Eve on one side, and of course the fallen cherub on the other, that your seed will be at enmity with the seed of the woman. And I don't know if that's not tipping off the literally the biblical conspiracy or the cosmic conspiracy, mm-hmm. which is then we read about it, of course, all through the biblical narrative. I don't know what is. And Paul echoes those words thousands of years later when he says, the mystery of iniquity, the secret of lawlessness, mysterion, is now at work. And that was at work in the time of Paul. And of course, it's got an agenda. And that agenda is to bring some sort of global chaos, which will then result in a global one-world government and a global one-world religious system. All of this is in the prophetic literature. What's interesting is there are about 2 billion Christians on the planet, 7 billion people on the planet at large. So out of the 7 billion, you've got 2 billion Christians. Out of that, you can parse those numbers down very quickly. I would put forth that it's probably maybe 50 million, maybe even less than that. I mean, there's no way of telling that or really knowing it, but you can take different denominations and understand that they never discuss prophetic literature.
Right.
They never look at the words of Yeshua, the warning words of Yeshua. That, of course, we find in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21. All those are addresses that are found in our New Testaments. And what's interesting is when this book was actually supposed to come out around 2012, 2013, and Father God did a detour, and I was ready to go to press. I mean, it was at the editors. That's how close we were. Probably about 2 to 3 months away from heading off to the editor. And Father God said, nope, and redirected me. And we put out instead, about 6 months after that, On the Trail of the Nephilim, which, of course, became our best-selling book to date. Mm-hmm. So I was working on the Trail Volume 3, and the Lord did another switcheroo on me and said, nope, go back to the Days of Chaos. So here we are, and it's extremely apropos for everything that is happening in September. We are doing a pre-sale on it. It's the book costs $19.99, and we're parsing that down to $15, and it's also autographed if you do a pre-sale. But it should be out sometime the end of September, right around the 23rd. Hopefully somewhere in that time. But yeah, exactly. We'll be shipping books off. And Derek, what's alarming to all of us is that there seems to be all the signs seem to be hitting. I just returned from a conference in Texas the week before, a conference in Florida. Both pastors, Pastor Tim, Pastor John, were stating that they had never seen it. All the signs that Yeshua, that Jesus warns us about operating on all eight cylinders. And I completely agree with them. In fact, I would add to that, that everywhere we go, we see exactly the same, or we hear exactly the same verbiage from pastors, from people. There's an expectancy. And getting back to the few million, 50 million or 40 million, whatever the number is, there's not that many people that are really looking at the signs that are expected out of that 2 billion number that are Christians on the globe. You can really parse it down. I'm not a numbers guy. There's no way to track it. I have no idea. But I would venture to say that the numbers are probably a lot smaller than what many people would imagine.
Yeah. The Barna Group has done a number of surveys. About every 5 years, they repeat a survey of American Christians. They don't do it worldwide, mm-hmm. of course, but they found that in America, only 9% of the American population has what Barna defines as a biblical worldview, which is holding to six core tenets of Christian doctrine, all of which should be like Christianity 101. Jesus lived a sinless sure. life. He was born of a virgin. Satan is a real force or entity and not just a concept, you know, things like that.
Right.
But sure. the thing that was really disturbing was that of people who self-identify as born again Christians, people you would expect to know these things, only 19% had a biblical worldview. Fewer than half the Protestant pastors coming out of seminary have a biblical worldview. So your numbers are probably right. There are a lot of people who identify as Christians who are cultural Christians. I'm a Christian because I'm not a Muslim and I'm not a Buddhist and I'm not right. a Hindu. But they really don't know what that means. And frankly, I was that way even up until the time that I married Sharon. Sharon will testify to this. We had some interesting discussions in the early days of my marriage, and I am thankful every day that she stuck with me until the Holy Spirit applied the spiritual 2x4 to the side of my head. One of the songs that the gospel quartet I sang with in the back in Illinois that really was meaningful to me. In fact, I liked it so one of our other guys brought it in, and I did an arrangement of it, is a song that is the chapter title of chapter 3 of your forthcoming book. It's called Jesus is Coming Soon, but it starts off, troublesome times are here, filling men's hearts with fear, freedom we all hold dear now is at stake, etc. It's a song that dates back to World War II when people were looking across the ocean and seeing what was happening, the Japanese on the march, the Germans on the march, seemingly unstoppable. And this was within a generation of World War I, which was, you know, the war to end all wars. You know, millions and millions of people dead because of World War I. The Spanish flu of 1919 killing 20 to 50 million people. It must have seemed in the first half of the 20th century that the world was about to end. So the song seems very appropriate again today. And there are some things we're seeing now that we just can't imagine having happened in earlier years. In fact, you reference in a recent a piece that you wrote, the so-called zombie apocalypse that the media designated, you know, kind of a tongue-in-cheek title back in 2010, 2011, which started with that horrific scene in Miami where a fellow was shot about a dozen times as he was eating the face off of a homeless man. It wouldn't stop. And that was the first of a number of incidents like that. We tracked over a dozen in the course of a year that were similar. And we still see them popping up from time to time. Of course, the media and the culture at large said, well, this guy must have been on drugs. But as you noted in your piece, there were no drugs found in the man's system. Marijuana, but marijuana doesn't typically make you violent and cannibalistic at the same time.
And it was only traces of marijuana. I mean, yes. It wasn't like the guy was a major pothead. Traces of marijuana.
Right. So what is behind all of this? Does this signify something?
Well, you know, the trouble sometimes can be the Nashville flood that not many people know about, which was basically a 500-year deluge. I mean, that flood was just incredible that hit Nashville. What's interesting about Bidets of Chaos, the book, is I'm drawing from the blog. I blogged for about eight years now. There's over 2,200 posts on the blog. So it's really a pool of information. It's a resource of information. One of the title headings in that chapter is the BP oil spill. Mm. You know, day 87, 180 million gallons. That were leaked out into the Gulf. So it's interesting. You know, we seem to forget about some of the things, some of the incredible storms and hurricanes and just troublesome times that has occurred just in the last few years. And that's what's so cool about the book, because you can see like a progression and then judge for yourself whether or not, you know, it's business as usual or something more. Mm-hmm. But getting back to the Miami Cannibal, when that happened, I went out on a limb. And you remember the media is going, oh, it's basalt, suburbia. Right. Mm-hmm. The guy's high on basalt. And I just said, no, he's not. That has every indicator of demonic possession. And what's even more bizarre, when we read the Book of Enoch, which I'll grant is a pseudepigraphical book, but it was found in the canon all throughout the centuries, even in the Apocrypha. I do believe in the first edition of the King James Bible, they had the Apocrypha, and then of course they got rid of it for publishing costs, not for content, but for publishing costs. That's why it wasn't printed in latter editions. But I digress. The bottom line is, when we read in the Book of Enoch, it states specifically that the Nephilim, which of course are the unholy union of the fallen sons of, or the fallen angels and the daughters of men, and their that unholy union, the coitus that happens between them produces the Nephilim. What's interesting about this is it says in the Book of Enoch that the Nephilim began to eat and drink the blood of human beings. That's what it states. And of course, that's incredibly grisly. That's cannibalism.
Right.
What is interesting, before I come to my point and get back to the Miami Cannibal, we read about the same type of mischief, for lack of a better word, happening in the United States of America by the oral tradition, or through the oral traditions of Native Americans that state there were large, six-fingered, red-headed cannibals all throughout the Americas. Everybody from the Algonquin to the Cherokee. I was just down in the Gulf Coast. Nine-footers were allegedly seen by the Spanish conquistadors. In the 15th century, down to the Incas. I mean, it's everywhere. It's out here in California, which I touched on and actually have real photographic evidence in On the Trail of the Nephilim too. But the bottom line is, when the media was jumping up and down and stating unequivocally that these were basalts, and they did all these exposés on basalts, and they showed people, I went out on a limb and I said, this is not basalts. This is a Nephilim spirit. And the Book of Enoch says that it doesn't say in the latter days, but it basically says there'll come a time when the spirits of the Nephilim will rise up against the sons and daughters of men because they came from them. Mm-hmm. That's what it says in the Book of Enoch. And so I posted that what they will find are no traces of bath salts, and then they'll be scratching their heads. And sure enough, about 30 days later, when the toxicology reports came back, Derek, there were no bath salts, there were no drugs, there were traces of marijuana. So, you know, you don't go ballistic from having a couple of hits off a joint 3 weeks earlier. Something happened to that guy. He opened himself up in some way, and we're not being told what. Be very interesting now, years later, now that the dust is settled, to actually trace this guy's family and friends and do like an expose on it. Mm. Because he was obviously into something, and that wasn't reported by the media.
No, of course not. We've seen that as a pattern. I think the most obvious since Sharon and I began PID radio back in 2005 was the case of the Hosanna Church down in Chapultepec Parish in Louisiana, which was the inspiration for the first season of the HBO series True Detective. Very obvious occult activity at a church, and it was reported initially, but then the police backed off And that was not even entered into the court case that was filed against the pastor and the youth pastor. They were eventually charged with child abuse. But the occult markings on the on the floors of the church, the fact that the youth room, the youth group's room in the church had the windows painted black, and the hooded garb that had been part of the ceremonies and the rituals, you know, all of that stuff was just kept out of the press. As was the reporting on the case of the pastor, not the pastor, but the priest in Toledo, Ohio, Robinson, who was convicted for the murder of Sister Margaret Paul years before in Toledo in a ritualistic killing in the chapel of a hospital. Again, that's why when I started the program today, I said, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. And I guess I should have done a better job of conveying my meaning, which is that the supernatural worldview is the rational worldview, because there's no other way to explain things like that and the case of the Miami Cannibal.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. It's we do live in a supernatural world. Paul in Ephesians 6 talks about, and Russ Dizdar always gives us the Greek, the cosmocrators, the exousia, in other words,
the archons,
wickedness in high places.
Right.
And that's basically what we're looking at, principalities. We're not fighting entities that are flesh and blood. We're fighting principalities, archons, exousia, cosmocrators. In other words, these are rankings of wickedness in high places. That's what's going on. I believe that there is a satanic conspiracy, a Luciferian conspiracy. It's playing out now in ways that I've never seen. It's got one agenda, to bring about the advent of the anti-Messiah, which I think he actually may be walking the earth as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, very interesting. All the signs are here. You know, Yeshua, Jesus, and I want to just say something. There was a rabbi at this conference who was over the weekend. And when I finished up on Saturday, and I was exhausted, Derek, I was the only speaker there. I spoke for about 5 hours.
Wow.
About 2 hours in the morning and 3 hours in the afternoon, nonstop. I mean, we did a lunch break, but, you know, the 3 hour stint was a long time. Lots of slides. We did a little break in the middle there, but I mean, it's a long time. And of course, the table was very crowded with people wanting to know more, getting autographs, asking questions. There were prayer time afterwards as we ministered to several people that were there. All that goes. So it's exhausting. And this rabbi starts arguing with me about using a word, the name Jesus, and saying that it's only Yeshua, and that those who use the name of Jesus are saying it wrong. And I just looked at the guy and I said, well, that's crazy, because we know that the New Testament was translated in Greek. Okay. And the Greek name is when you translate it, basically is Jesus. Yes, his Hebrew name is Yeshua, but the entire New Testament was translated in Greek. And it's the same way. Are you telling me, let's say, if your name is Umberto and you're in Peru, well, if I translate Umberto in English, it's Robert. Mm-hmm. So it's just absolute, this kind of stuff is so nonsensical to me. And frankly, it's, you know, Jesus. That's Jesus in the Greek, Jesus Christos, Jesus the Messiah, Yeshua HaMashiach in Hebrew, Jesus the Messiah, okay, Jesus Christos in the Greek, and Jesus Christ, or because Christos is Messiah, and that's how it breaks down. I mean, it's just, I mean, they're grasping for straws, in my opinion. But getting back on track, what I took were the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, and basically here, Yeshua states very, very specifically that there, you know, let no man deceive you. Many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, I am the Messiah. Don't believe them. And then he goes on and says, there'll be wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes in diverse places, troublesome times, famines and pestilence. And this is what's interesting is there's a chapter 6, on false Christ and other false prophets. It is absolutely astounding. And I actually show some of these clips in my presentations, and the audience just sits there and gasps. They can't believe it. Mm-hmm. You know, some of it's sort of humorous, like when you get the guy in Ohio, Ra'el, who's all dressed up in Knight Templar's garb, and he comes riding out on a white horse, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. But then you get the Russian Messiah, and this guy has got followers in the thousands, and he wears the costumes, the robes, the long hair, and he comes out, and people just, they just fall and they cry and they weep and they sing to this guy, and you know he's supposedly, you know, Jesus. And then we've got Rael, who's the Raelians. His real name is Claude Vorlohorn, and good old Claude was a race car driver in France,
right?
And got picked up by ET in a saucer. And what's interesting about this, he was told that the Elohim was his father, and they, in other words, Yeshua, Jesus, and Claude had the same father from the Elohim, and they right. were in fact brothers. It's amazing how all this works. They always attack the divinity of Jesus, and then they go after the work of the cross as not being necessary. So in that chapter, false Christ and other false prophets. I mean, that in itself is such a train ride, because here we are, and I mean, look. They have been false messiahs all throughout history for the last 2,000 years. I only focused on them the last 35 years, basically, and just kind of stated, this is what we're looking at. You got guys like Rael, you got the Russian messiah, Rael, you got Benjamin Krem telling us that Maitreya is here now, and on it goes. And that, when you think about it, when the Gospels were first told, because it was not written down until after the fact, so you got Yeshua, and you got his disciples with him. There is no movement. There are no churches, cathedrals, no Pope, no Billy Grahams. There's nothing. There's this little itinerant preacher, and there's no PR firm. There's no internet or television shows or nothing. It's just him. Obviously, something happened in the ancient world that turned it upside down. Of course, that's the indwelling of the Spirit of a living God being born from above, which happens in the upper room to all the disciples, and then 3,000 people hear the good news and their lives are transformed that same day. But when Yeshua is stating this, and I know you know, most of the audience knows this, there, I mean, that is a statement of the absolute. It's paramount, and it's hubris. It's like, who are you kidding? Many will come in my name saying, I'm the Messiah. Who do you think you are, buddy? The Messiah or something? And even then, you know, the disciples are kind of scratching their heads going like, who does this guy think he is?
Yeah.
And of course, he is the God-man, fully God, fully man, Yeshua, born of a virgin. I mean, that's why we believe what we believe, not only because of the gospel message, but because our lives have been transformed by the Spirit of a living God that indwells in us and changes us. And our blessed hope, of course, is to be finally translated before, you know, it hits the fan, which looks like it may be soon, who knows, and to be with him, to rise and greet him in the air. But I mean, what a statement to make, that many will come in my name saying I'm the Messiah. Don't be deceived by them. I find that absolutely sobering and startling.
No, I agree. And I think we're in that time when this is happening. And sadly, it's happening inside the church as well as from without. But that's for another program. One of the chapters here that really intrigues me, because I've done a little bit of reading on this. Not enough, though, to really get a handle on the situation. Having seen a little bit from the inside, my previous marriage, I was married to a Roman Catholic woman, and I did convert to Roman Catholicism, not really understanding the differences in doctrine.
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, because I consider myself an intelligent guy with pretty good reading comprehension, and yet I wasn't paying enough attention to understand the difference. My main concern was, we're all going to be a family, and we're going to go to the same place on, you know, Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning, depending on when we feel like going. And that is chapter 12 of the forthcoming book, Days of Chaos, devoted to Marian apparitions. What is the deal with Mary appearing, especially since the incident, was it 1913, 1917? I forget the year.
1917.
Right. The Fatima appearance. What is behind these visitations, apparent visitations, from something declaring itself to be the Virgin Mary?
Well, I mean, that's, we could do literally a whole show on that.
Absolutely.
Because it's Jim Tetlow, the late Jim Tetlow, wrote a book, Messengers from Heaven, and in that, Jim outlines the whole Marian apparition phenomenon. I've been dealing with it. I wrote about it in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, once again, in the Cosmic Chess Match, without belaboring the point, basically, you brought up the 1917 Marian apparition. That is one of the more well-known ones, but they continue. One of the lesser known ones, of course, is the 2009 apparition in Egypt, right outside Cairo over a Coptic church. I actually showed clips of that. And it's astounding, because unlike Fatima, where we don't see, we have pictures of the event in Fatima, the children, the before and after, but there's nothing of the actual apparition. It's certainly nothing of the so-called miracle of the sun. There is nothing of the miracle of the sun. All they show is the sun in the sky. There's nothing that you would look at the photograph and say, well, my gosh, that's something supernatural. And this gets into conspiracies with the Vatican and the Catholic Church. And there's books I've read and referenced by two Portuguese writers who really went into this thing. When you go back and you look at the Fatima apparitions, which is what they did to the local papers, and the witnesses were saying, I looked up and saw a dull silver disc. The words dull silver disc are used over and over and over again by the witnesses who were there at Fatima in 1917, and there was upwards of 70,000 people gathered in Fatima awaiting the so-called appearance of the Virgin Mary. Now, the kids saw something, but no one else saw anything except the so-called miracle of the sun. And when you go back and listen or read the accounts, in our modern-day vernacular, we would say they saw a UFO, dull silver disc, and it's in front of the sun, blocking out the sun, and then it hovers and begins to descend. The people, it had been raining all day. People are suddenly dry. Some people are healed. There's this stuff like ashes, or like the Catholic Church, you know, changed it and made that rose petals, but it wasn't rose petals. It was this weird orange-like substance which fell to the ground, and we've heard about a lot of that. Same substance is seen when UFOs are present. So it was dressed up in Catholic clothes, and it became the Mary of the Bible. And then, of course, you've got all these what I would consider false prophecies. Now, I say this with all due respect to Catholics. There are many good people out there.
Absolutely.
Who look at the Fatima apparitions and go, oh, it was Mary in the Bible. But it begs the question, first of all, and Jim Tetlow brings this up in his book, why would Mary appear? In the New Testament narrative, Mary's there. We get that. Is she blessed among all women? Absolutely. Do I revere her and have great respect for her? Of course I do. Absolutely. An amazing woman, and her heart was pierced by that sword when she saw her son, and she knew who he was. There's no doubt about it. And she must have been completely perplexed. Why doesn't he do something as he's hanging on the cross? Mm-hmm. You know, why is he allowing this? Because, look, we know from the biblical narrative that Yeshua's first miracle was at the wedding feast of Canaan. And it's sort of tongue-in-cheek because, you know, I think she's like bumping up against him at this point because he's like 30 years old. It's like, you know, and when are you going to start doing something? It's almost like she knows kind of who he is, has to, because she knows what happens. She's not sure the full extent. She has no idea about the cross, although that prophecy was given to her. And she starts, you know, well, just do whatever he tells you to do. And he goes, woman, it's not my time yet. But he changes the water to wine and makes all that happen. I mean, so surely she knows something of what's happening. And again, I sort of digress here a little bit. The bottom line is I have great respect for Mary. However, the 1917 apparition in Fatima has nothing to do with the Mary of the Bible. When Fernandez and I forget the other, the Armada, go back and look at the narrative in the public record about Fatima, what they find is that the kids, the three seers who see this apparition, tell of her in a very short skirt, holding this like weird object in her hand, and her lips never moved. She communicated with them telepathically. What does this sound like to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so women did not wear short dresses in those days, and certainly the Mary of the Bible wouldn't be wearing something like this. So it was dressed up in Catholic clothes. Fast forward to this Coptic church in Egypt, which I was talking about, the same type of thing is manifesting, except it's open, absolutely open manifestation, so much so that it's going on day after day after day, weeks on end. Thousands of Muslims and Christians are getting together in front of this Coptic church. The mayor of the city is so freaked out, he makes sure all the electricity is turned off. So it's not a hoax. It's not Project Bluebeam. No one's projecting holographic images. This is the real deal. The supernatural is manifesting. And what we see are four blobs of light. What is called Mary is sort of a female blob of light. And it's got this long blue train on the side of her head. That's supposed to be like a mantle over her head type of thing. And she's holding the baby Jesus. And behind her is supposedly Joseph, another blob of light. And beside him is another blob of light in the distance. And that's supposed to be, the archangel Gabriel. Well, I mean, how do you get that from looking at blobs of light? And if you want to, for those of you who are listening, you can just go on YouTube and Google Marian apparition, Coptic Church, Egypt. It will come up. And there's a bunch of different cell phone videos and other videos that are taking place. And I actually show this video, but I talk about it in Days of Chaos. And it's just one of many ongoing so-called Marian apparitions. And this, to me, it's like there's no one rebuking. No one's testing the spirits. It certainly doesn't look like Mary of the Bible. In fact, what it reminds me of is the warning that we get. Hey, be careful, because the fallen cherub Satan can even appear as an angel of light. And that's precisely what we see. So while I have great respect for the Mary of the Bible, I do not believe for an instant that these apparitions, all of them, down even to Medjugorje, to Fatima, mm-hmm. to Lourdes, all these places, these, in my opinion, they are not the Mary of the Bible. They are imposters. They are, in fact, the Queen of Heaven. Who is the Queen of Heaven? And again, Jim Tetlow did a wonderful expose on this. When we go into Jeremiah, we find out who the Queen of Heaven really is. And it's not the Mary of the Bible, simply because the Queen of Heaven, Jeremiah, predates the Mary of the Bible by hundreds of years.
Yeah, yeah. And sadly, we see other denominations here in the last 10 years that have and I'm talking about the Episcopal Church USA now, which to my way of thinking is no longer a Christian denomination, posting to its website. You can't find it there now, of course. It's been pulled, but at one point actually had a ritual, basically, that was written by Wiccans. It involved raisin cakes, which are part of the worship, the ceremony that dates all the way back to the days of Jeremiah, and the raisin cakes that were prepared for the Queen of Heaven. This taking place in 21st century America. You know, I hate to say this to the atheists like, you know, Richard Dawkins, all due respect to his scientific acumen, but the post-Christian world is not going to move to a state of atheistic reason. It's going to move into a pagan into a paganized society, which is not going to be an improvement. We're seeing another example of this out in the deserts in Nevada today, Black Rock City there, Burning Man taking place even as we record this in the final or the first week of September in 2015. Mm-hmm. One of the transformational festivals that Carl Tykrib has been tracking and writing about over the past year or so, hundreds of them per year across the globe, essentially magical workings, occult workings to bring about their new world order. Chapter 17 of the book, The Great Falling Away. I know that there are some prophecy teachers that will interpret the verse from where we get the great apostasy, apostasia, the Greek word apostasia, First Thessalonians 2? As referring to the actual catching away of the church, the actual rapture itself. How do you view the great falling away, and what evidence do you see of it in the world around us?
Yeah, first of all, it's a very controversial passage, and you just stated that. Look, I want to state something. I am staunchly pre-trib. There was a moment in time about 15 years ago when I was reading through the New Testament and started looking at it going, well, maybe it's sort of, and I adopted sort of the mid-trib pre-wrath position for a while. I was toying with it. I really didn't, you know, take it in, but I was like wondering about it. Looking for it.
There's some evidence for it. Sure.
Yeah. And I am staunchly pre-trib. And the more I look at what's going on. In fact, I've stated on my blog site many times, the only way out of this mess may be up because you're not going to fix this. You're not going to fix what's going on. Sorry, not going to fix it. The bottom line for me is this, that when we read that account in the biblical narrative, specifically Paul writing to the folks in Thessalonica, he says that the man of sin will not be revealed until the great apostasy happens, and it's actually an event, the apostasy, apostasia in the Greek, the apostasy. It's where we get our word from apostasy. Now, it can also mean falling away, but it doesn't mean harpazo, like the Greek, which means fault, which is rapture. It can mean falling away, but it doesn't, in the context that it's used, it's not talking about the rapture here. He's talking about that there'll be, before the son of perdition is revealed, there'll be an apostasy. And it's an event, the apostasia. And that begs the question to me, what event could occur that would result in the falling away, the great falling away? And in my opinion, Derek, what that would be would be the revealing of the so-called extraterrestrial presence. Now, before people start rolling their eyeballs and laughing, that's always a deadly combination, ignorance and arrogance. Most people have no idea that Father Funes, let's say, and this is the work of Tom Horn and Chris Putman, and we've interviewed Chris for Watcher 7, mm-hmm. that Father Funes and the Vatican at large are positioning, and I'm using Chris's, quoting Chris here, are positioning themselves for an alien savior. A lot of Christians don't understand that. You mentioned Richard Dawkins, with all due respect, that Dawkins, when it sits down in Ben Stein's wonderful movie, got to see it if you have not seen it, Expelled, and Ben says, where did the first self-replicating molecule appear? And, you know, how did all this begin? How did life begin? And all Richard Dawkins, which is obviously a brilliant mind, brilliant man, but all he can come up with is circular reasoning, with all due respect. And he's intellectually bankrupt. He has no idea of how this began. And what he then says to Stein is, in my opinion, completely ludicrous in circular reasoning. He says, well, it could have happened in this way, that millions of years ago, a race of aliens in another part of the galaxy or the universe rose to some sort of high level of civilization through some sort of Darwinian process. And they created us and seeded us through the universe, and poof, we landed on Earth, and here we are. That concept is called panspermia. The problem with it is, well, where did they come from? And it goes around and around, and that's circular reasoning, and that's why it's intellectually bankrupt. We read in the biblical narrative, and this, of course, Dawkins does not believe in the supernatural at all. And I know, Derek, you and I are staunch supernaturalists.
Yes.
So when we read in the Gospel of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and he was with God from the beginning. All things were created by him, and without him, nothing that was made was made. And that, of course, is talking about Yeshua speaking everything into existence. Now, I don't pretend for a second to understand how that works, but I do know that the co-discoverers of DNA, Watson and Crick — Crick was a vexed man, and I quote this in my books and lectures and speaking appearances, all that — that Crick stated that no matter how many billions of years of prebiotic sop, in other words, everything just sitting there in some watery mass, that there's no way even one strand of just one strand of DNA is going to somehow form by accident. That's how complex this thing is.
Right.
And he knew that. And so he like Dawkins, looked to the stars. Well, the answer has to be out there. It certainly can't be the God of the Bible. So what we're looking at here with the whole DNA thing is incredible. But because we know that we're fearfully and wonderfully made, and that's what the DNA seems to show us. Mm-hmm. We are fearfully — it's a very complex deal. But Dawkins is pointing to the coming great deception. He's pointing to the great falling away.
Ah.
When they reveal themselves — and that could happen, it could happen in September, I don't know. And what most people don't understand, the nations of the UK, Great Britain, France, Germany, Belgium, Japan, Mexico, Chile, Peru, to name just a few, even the Vatican, has all stated that the extraterrestrial phenomenon is real. They've all stated that. Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister for Canada, has stated openly on film, UFOs are as real as the airplanes flying overhead. And we get people like Edgar Mitchell and astronauts and heads of state all stating that this phenomenon, this UFO phenomenon, is actually real. It's not a bunch of swamp gas or flock of birds, you know, reflecting a weather balloon tangled up in a flock of birds reflecting the planet Venus over some swamp gas. That's not what we're looking at here. That this, whatever is going on, is real, as I say, real, burgeoning, and not going away. Mm-hmm. So when they show up, unless a Christian understands a priori before the event what they are looking at, this, in my opinion, could certainly trigger a great falling away. When ET shows up, they will bring us two things. They will bring us free energy, and they will tell us that they created all life on this planet. They seeded us here. They manipulated early man's DNA. They started the world's religion, civilizations. Now, at this critical juncture in human history, they are back to usher mankind into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge. And this is the great falling away. This will make millions of Christians turn from their belief and embrace the lie, which is exactly what prophecy tells us. Because they did not believe the truth, God sends them strong delusion. Why should we be surprised? Men faint from fear from what is coming upon the earth. So I think that the great falling away is imminent. I think it's close. And by the way, there's plenty of room, plenty of time between the apostasy, the great falling away, until the son of perdition is revealed. Is it one day? Is it 5 days? Is it a year? We don't know. There's plenty of time between those events to have a rapture occur and still be pre-trib.
Yep. And by the way, it's 2 Thessalonians 2:3. I was mistaken. 2 Thessalonians 2:3. I should know that
Thank
by now,
Eric.
Because that is a key verse and one that is wrestled over, has been wrestled over by scholars of scripture for 2,000 years. It is a meme that we keep seeing in the major media. Now that I'm doing a daily video news update for Skywatch TV and watching for this, I'm seeing it like almost every other day. Some scientists somewhere claiming that, we've conducted this experiment where we've taken what we think a comet is made of and we dropped into what we think the primordial soup was made of and then zapped it with a lot of power and electricity. And lo and behold, we got the building blocks of amino acids. Yeah, okay, a lot of assumptions there. And how did they assemble? and then another statement just the other day. Oh, there could be water underneath the icy crust of Pluto, which could mean that there's actual life under there. And, oh, hey, there could be life on Mars. And, hey, there could be... And just this constant meme that's preparing Christians for this idea that everything you know is wrong. If you believe in creation, you're stupid. And prepare to junk your religion as soon as our alien overlords show up. And, by the way, don't pay much attention to the name on the book cover there. That's actually a cookbook. And Richard Dawkins' worldview can be summarized this way. It's turtles all the way down. So final thoughts, L.A. You conclude on a note of hope, and this gets back to what I said earlier, that Christians looking at the conspiratorial worldview, that it's not paranoid if they really are trying to get us. And yes, we are wrestling against powers, principalities, literal, intelligent evil that seeks to do us harm. But those who hang out at places on the web where all they talk about are the conspiracies, but they don't talk about the good news, the gospel, I don't see for guys who have that conspiratorial worldview without the joy that comes from knowing that, ultimately the good guys win, what purpose do they have for living? What is the good news? What final thoughts do you impart from your perspective, a worldview shaped by the guidebook to the supernatural?
Well, I honestly believe, of course, in the biblical narrative, and I believe that we're in the latter days. I believe that these are the days of chaos. I believe that we're in a window of time unlike any other time, which, of course, the biblical narrative states it'll be the time of Jacob's trouble. Mm-hmm. Yeshua states, when you see these things, look up because your redemption is drawing nigh. But then he also tells us, that's our escape clause. But I believe, I mean, my prayer is like, Lord, let's go. I mean, we're all ready. We've had it with this place. This is not our home. I mean, it's just not. Gay marriage in the United States? Are you kidding me? And, you know, that now that's the law of the land by five people. Whatever happened to democracy? But I digress.
Yeah.
The bottom line is we're in a window of time where all the signs that Yeshua states will happen, which will precede his coming, are operating to the nines right now. They literally are. It's on all eight cylinders, whatever analogy you want to use. They are firing like I've never seen them before. Hal Lindsey recently stated the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you've got people that have been watching, certainly Hal, a lot longer than I have. I mean, I cut my, in some ways, prophetic teeth on Hal Lindsey, a late great Planet Earth. Many of us got saved by that book. I got saved by David Hunt's book, The Cult Explosion. The bottom line is, these signs lead up to the time of Jacob's trouble. These are the birth pains, which then give birth to that 7-year period, the time of Jacob's trouble, the tribulation period. And that's where we're headed, Derek. That's where we're headed. Mm. And I have been tracking it for 8 years on the blog. And what I see is, and we get into this in Days of Chaos by the same name, our Watchers 9 video, which we can talk about once it's released, and that should be released again, sometime around the same time as the book. Eventually, we'll be selling both of them as a package. But that we cover different things in Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, than I do in my book. The book is about 450 pages, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Watchers 9 will be about an hour and a half. But, you know, there was my final thoughts. I wrote this blog, and it went viral. And it was called There Must Be a Reason. There must be a reason why the Republicans will pass Obama trade but won't read the bill before doing so. There must be a reason why Speaker of the House John Boehner is ramrodding the bill down our throats. There must be a reason why the national debt is frozen at $18
trillion. Yeah,
there must be a reason why every mass shooting event, Jared Loftner, the Bassman shooter, the VTech shooter, Adam Lanza, now the Charleston shooter. The first thing we hear from our government is the need to round up our guns. Never mind that all these shooters are high on big pharma. And I went on and on and on. There's probably 40 or 50 things. There must be a reason. It is amazing the window of time that we find ourselves living in, where and there's a movement among many good Christians. It's called supersessionism, replacement theology, that these people, for the most part, are amillennialists. They do not believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. They are staunchly against it. And with that, coupled with that, of course, is a degree of anti-Semitism. And there's no way around it. And it's rearing its ugly head. And I actually wrote about some of this, the rise of anti-Semitism, in the book. I've never seen anything like it. Obama is certainly no friend, with all due respect to POTUS, he's no friend of Israel, no matter what he says. And now Israel is surrounded by those who pose a grave existential threat to her very existence. And so this is just one more marker. When we look at the instability of the global financial markets, when we look at the record flooding, the record drought, the record temperature changes, the continual animal die-offs, just last weekend, 50 whales beached themselves in Alaska. I mean, it's just non-ending. There's a segment in Watchers 9, Derek, which is just really cutting edge stuff. We went to a beekeeper right here outside of Los Angeles to interview this guy, because we know that there's a real dilemma called the collapsing of the hives.
Mm-hmm. Colony collapse disorder, CCD.
Yeah, exactly. And this is not good, and it's systemic, and it's happening all through America. And, you know, part of us, we tied it back into the stuff that they're spraying in our skies, and they've done necromancies on, that's not the right word. What is it called when they take a dead animal?
Necropsy. Necropsy.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And on these bees, and they found the aluminum content in the bees to be 100 times what it should be. And they're saying that the bees are actually getting dementia, Alzheimer's, like a version of Alzheimer's, which is why they're dying off. So look, we're in turbulent, troublesome, unprecedented times, in my opinion. And the Christian should look at these signs, not be fearful of them, but understand that we were warned of this by Yeshua almost 2,000 years ago. And now, in this window, they are manifesting. Mm.
This is, troublesome times are here, no doubt. And your book is a chronicle of the signs from all aspects of human existence that are pointing to one thing, and that is the culmination of human history, basically, with the return of Jesus Christ. The book and Watchers 9, and we will talk again once that's available, L.A., both coming out in late September?
Yes, okay. around the 23rd, hopefully.
Okay. And now, this program is going to air the same week, so it's a little late to promote the Nephilim Mounds 3 conference, unfortunately, but this is still in the future by the time most people are hearing this. September 12th in Ohio, Russ Dizdar, our friend Gary Stearman, Chief Joseph Riverwind, Fritz Zimmerman. That's a pretty impressive lineup. But what do you expect the topics to cover, or what topics will be covered at Nephilim Mounds 3?
Well, Chief Joseph will bring the Native American First Nation people perspective about the giants. He'll also be leading worship with his wife, Laura Lynn Riverwind. And we know them both. We actually interviewed them both for Watchers 9. He's just a wonderful man. They're just a wonderful couple. And that's going to be just great, because most people don't understand that Native Americans know that there were 9-footers and even larger running around the Americas before they got here. So hearing it from the horse's mouth, as it were, is fantastic. Fritz Zimmerman, in some ways, I owe him a debt, because Fritz's book, Nephilim in the Ohio Valley, was the book that changed my life, that set me on the trail from a Christian biblical perspective. And that's why we went to Peru and On the Trail of the Nephilim 1 and 2. That's why those books were done, because of Fritz's research. Fritz is an incredible researcher. He's got a new book coming out, and he'll be giving us the what's been happening and how the how there's been a cover-up. And we'll also go out to the mounds, and Fritz will give us a lecture on the Great Circle Mount in Ohio. Gary Stearman is bringing a message which he's never brought forth before about the Nephilim, which will be incredible. Russ Dizdar will be discussing the backbreeding of the Nephilim from the Third Reich and all the occult societies. I'm going to bring in that there's been a massive cover-up, and I'm going to actually show photographic proof of the cover-up, which you won't believe when you see it. Unbelievable, which we just saw. And so it's going to be a great 10 hours. It's September 12th and then the 13th out on the mounds. I think there's still time to, I know we were about 450 right now. I'm sure we're going to, this, it only holds 600. So we're closing the gap. We have room for about 150, 160 people. I'm sure we'll be over 500. We've got 2 weeks to go. Hope to see you there. And thanks for talking about it.
Yeah, September 12th is the date, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the website, NephilimMounds3.com. LA's website, LAMarzulli.wordpress.com, his blog, his personal site, LAMarzulli.net. And again, links to those will be in the show notes as well. Look forward to seeing Days of Chaos, the book, and Watchers 9, Days of Chaos, both coming out in late September, if the Lord tarries and we're still here, which I expect, but you know, I've been expecting the Chicago Cubs to win the World Series every year since 1969. I've been wrong about that, so don't take my word as gospel. L.A., great to talk with you, and say hi to Peggy. We look forward to seeing you guys again soon.
Definitely. Take care.
The show notes are online at vftb.net, and as always, you'll have links to the guest's website there, in this case, lamarzulli.net and lamarzulli.wordpress.com, which is his blog site. And we're looking forward to talking with him again once the Watchers DVD, the next edition in the Watchers DVD series, is available. And that should be within the next month or so. Sadly, because once again, I went home and forgot that the files were here at the office. This program is uploading a day or so later than I had hoped. I'm trying to hold to a Wednesday-Sunday schedule, but I pray you'll forgive me this week. It's been a rather busy. So we've been trying to work ahead, preparing for a busy day of interviews. I'm recording this part of the program on the morning of Friday, September 11th, of course, the 14th anniversary of a day that all of us old enough to remember will never forget. We've got six programs for Skywatch TV that we'll be recording today, and as many daily updates as we can squeeze in there as possible. So my brain will be the consistency of yogurt by about mid-afternoon today. But had to work ahead on the daily news updates for Skywatch TV in order to get those done. And in order to facilitate editing in peace, I took the video for today's update, the Sci Friday update with Sharon, home yesterday and forgot the interview with LA here at the office. So anyway, that's why this is going up a little late. But and unfortunately, too, because of the this is so close to the Nephilim Mounds Conference, we weren't able to really do much useful good to L.A. and Russ and the coordinators of the Nephilim Mounds Conference. And I feel badly about that because I consider L.A. and Russ, Gary Stearman and Bob Ulrich, all of whom will be there, along with a couple other speakers, to be friends. So hopefully a great turnout there in Ohio for the Nephilim Mounds Conference. And one of these years, we're going to have to get out there ourselves, because I would certainly love to see the Serpent Mound for my own self, as my ancestors were very early settlers who traveled down the Ohio River, went past the Serpent Mound, eventually were on the first boatload or two of settlers at what is now Cincinnati, Ohio, in 1794, if I remember the year, maybe 1788. I think that's about right. Somewhere in there. Anyway, the first boatload, in fact, there's a monument down there on the near the river in Cincinnati that's got my ancestors' names on it. So, and there, but for the grace of God, you know, I might not be here, because my great, great, great grandfather was almost a victim in the ongoing wars against the natives that took place in the Ohio River Valley after the Revolution. He was a scout and spy for General Mad Anthony Wayne, and almost got himself killed on the way to joining up the forces before they marched to the Battle of the Fallen Timbers. Anyway, I digress. Surprise, surprise. So very quickly, because I want to get this posted before Chris Pinto gets here in about 25 minutes, just one brief news story just to comment on, and I think this is, a topic that deserves more conversation. And I'm just throwing this out there to start thought. There are many comments coming from those on the political left about how the United States needs to do more for the refugees that are trying to get away from the Middle East because of the fighting there. Some of the countries in Europe, specifically Central Europe, like Hungary, Slovenia, Slovakia, the Baltic states, Latvia and Estonia, where the people are not very open to the idea of taking in refugees from the Middle East. As they point out, we don't have any mosques here. Germany has offered to take in, what, 800,000? Some ridiculous, 80,000, some ridiculous number. And not by ridiculous mean foolish, but I mean, you know, they're offering to take in what seems to me to be an awful lot of refugees. And there are reports of a lot of problems in facilitating the transfer of refugees at the border between Hungary and Austria and so forth. The United States yesterday announcing that we will take in 10,000 Syrian refugees. Again, most of these, as far as we know, are not Christians. And the United States has been very, very reluctant to take in any Christian refugees from the Middle East for some strange reason. We talk more with Colonel Bob McGinnis about that in the program that just uploaded here, Two of You from the Bunker. There are commentators on the right who are looking at this, and they might object to being referred to as the right. I'm using it in the common use of the term. I know full well that there are those on the right, and I'll use that in air quotes, who aren't really conservatives in the true sense of the term. Okay. Who are pointing out some inconvenient truths about the Arab neighbors of the refugees in the Middle East. For example, Saudi Arabia, which has taken in exactly zero refugees and is offering to take in exactly zero refugees from Syria, has instead offered to build a couple hundred mosques in Germany so that the Muslims moving to Germany can continue to worship as they choose and be taught according to the will of Allah. And there are commentators who are saying, you know, this is beginning to look less like a migration of refugees and more like an invasion by refugees. So there's that. And also they also point out that the Saudis have something like 100,000 air-conditioned tents, and not small little tents, but, you know, measuring about 25 by 25, that could hold up to 3 million refugees. Air-conditioned tents that could hold up to 3 million refugees in a semi-permanent tent city that is totally vacant right now, completely empty, not a single resident. And it's there to facilitate pilgrims during the Hajj, which is where they, you know, all go to Mecca and then walk around the big rock. And again, Saudi Arabia offering to take in exactly zero refugees. So just bear that in mind when people try to make us in the West feel guilty. Not to say that we don't have some responsibility, because as that Defense Intelligence Agency document obtained by Judicial Watch points out, we are at least partly responsible because we supported Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is now the entity we know as the Islamic State. Coming up this Sunday, September 14th, Doc Marquis and Dr. David Schnitger, we have them talking about a new ministry that they're launching called Southwest Prophecy Ministries. You'll hear about that. Again, that'll be uploaded Sunday evening at vftb.net. And if all goes well, and we have enough time this morning, I hope I can grab Chris Pinto in here to talk about his new documentary film, which is called Dark Clouds Over Elberton. That's a reference to the Georgia Guidestones, one of the most mysterious public monuments in the world. It was erected in 1980 by a mysterious man calling himself R.C. Christian. Well, Chris Pinto and Dr. Michael Bennett, you may know him as Dr. Future, I believe, and Sharon agrees, have cracked the mystery of the identity of R.C. Christian. So hopefully we can get Chris on to talk about that. But at the very least, you'll see a program on Skywatch TV about that documentary, Dark Clouds Over Elberton, on skywatchtv.com. Our Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, will post a new study on Sunday morning, usually mid to late morning Sunday. We're into the book of Deuteronomy now. That's at gilberthouse.org. And this coming Tuesday night, interview with Carl Gallops on Skywatch TV, talking about his new book, Be Thou Prepared. Preparedness, prepping, is it biblical Or is it just prudent? Or is it both? Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. Central Time on the Christian Television Network, DirecTV Channel 376, Dish Network Channel 267, and Glory Star Satellite Channel 117. You can also watch it at ctnonline.com, or if you can't catch it Tuesday night, you can watch it later in the week on our Roku channel or on the official Skywatch TV YouTube channel. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.